Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Wednesday morning, November 7th. My name is Rob Doster. I have a fun show on the way for you today. I don't have a guest, but after watching the Champions Classic last night, I had to get some of these takes off of my chest. So I'm going to spend the next 15 to 20 minutes here talking to you about the game and letting you know what I thought about Kansas beating Michigan State, what I thought about Duke running through Kentucky like they were Eastern Kentucky, what I thought about Michigan State's junior class, what we think about what the future holds for this Kentucky basketball team. There's a lot to discuss. It was a fascinating night in Indianapolis in Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Before I get into all of that, I have to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast. If you enjoy what you hear on this podcast today, just go into the app that you listen to podcasts in, throw me a 5-star rating, say something nice about me in the comments. It really does help within the metrics, within the rankings, within the app itself. It's things that makes my bosses happy. And when my bosses are happy, I'm happy. When I'm happy, you are probably getting a better show. So just do it for your own benefit. I promise. It helps. Now let's get into those games last night. I am going to spend quite a bit of time talking about Duke's 118-84 win over Kentucky. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about Kansas holding off Michigan State. The final score was 92-87. Kansas did not end up covering the 5.5-point spread because they ended up missing some shots down the stretch. Michigan State made a little bit of a run, and Quentin Grimes missed a free throw with just seconds left on the clock that would have put them ahead by six. As somebody that may have invested a couple of dollars in Kansas covering that spread, I am just a little bit tilted about the way that that game ended because more or less the Jayhawks had total control. It feels weird saying this now based off of what we saw in the second game of the doubleheader, but Kansas entered the night as the preseason number one team in the country, and nothing that they did would make me believe anything other than this being one of the, if not the best college basketball team in the land. They lived up to the hype of a preseason number one team. I thought that their performance was really, really good. And the wild part about it is I don't even think their best player played all that well. You know, Dedrick Lawson had a really nice stat line. He finished with 20 points, 14 boards, 6 assists. He changed some shots at the rim. I think he got credited with 2 blocks. So his box score will make it seem like he played really well, but he actually really had one of those nights where nothing seemed to drop. He finished 5-for-18 from the floor. He missed both of the threes that he attempted. He just did not seem like he was totally comfortable going up against the physicality and some of the strength of those Michigan State big guys. You know, they're not exactly the most athletic team, Michigan State, but Nick Ward, Xavier Tillman, Kenny Goins, those guys are strong. They're tough. They're not going to let you back them down. They're not going to let you get around them without throwing a little bit of a chicken wing into your ribs. So I think Dedrick Lawson realized that playing against a top 10 caliber team is a little bit different than the last year that he spent playing as a practice team member in Lawrence Fieldhouse. So I think it was mostly good from him because, you know, when you do put up a stat line like that and you play a game that was not anywhere near your best basketball game, I think that is always going to be considered a good thing. One of the most interesting things I saw from that game from Kansas was that they clearly decided that they wanted to throw the ball into the post. I think Synergy had it as 26% of their offensive possessions were post touches. So it's very, very clear that they want to pound the ball into Udoka Azubuike. They want to pound the ball into David McCormick when he's out there. And, you know, at the times when Mitch Lightfoot is at the five, they want to give him the ball on the block, and they want to give Dedrick the ball on the block. They want to run their offense through the post, which is a little bit of an old school kind of Bill Self way of playing. You know, it's not what we saw last season when he had Svi Mihailiuk and LeGerald Vick combining to play the four. It's not what we saw 2 years ago when Josh Jackson, who was basically their secondary point guard, was the guy that was playing the four for him. This year is very different. This is definitely going to be a team where the offense runs through the post. This is going to be a team that thrives on the play of their big guys. And frankly, I thought Udoka Azubuike was really, really good last night. You know, he missed a couple of free throws down the stretch. Hakidoka is still going to be a thing, but he finished with 17 points. He was 7 for 10 from the floor. He made some big post moves when Kansas really needed it. If he had actually made his free throws, and we would be talking about this being a situation where he was something of a closer. Maybe that's a little bit too strong to say, but they definitely gave him the ball in big situations down the stretch. I thought he was really good protecting the rim. You know, overall, I just that was a really nice performance. One of the interesting things that's going to be that we're going to have to watch is like the high-low game and the high-low actions that Bill Self runs between Dedrick and Udoka Azubuike. Dedrick is such a good passer. I mean, Bill Self has been raving about that all preseason. And there were a couple of possessions where they just, you know, gave the ball to Dedrick a little bit further out than the foul line, somewhere at the high post, and they ran ball screens between him and Doak. And I think that is when you have a four-man that can pass the ball the way that Dedrick Lawson can handle the ball a little bit and can, you know, run ball screens, that's when you want to do it, because big guys, power forward centers, they're not used to being the two guys defending ball screens. They're not, you know, they're used to their job as, you know, hedgers or switching or whatever it is, guarding the guy setting the screen. They're not used to having to deal with that and communicating that way when they are guarding the ball handler. So that's something I think will be really effective. But the story of this game, to me, for Kansas, it wasn't the bigs. It was the guard play. And I think that was the big question with them coming in. You know, it's not often that we see a Bill Self team start two freshmen in the backcourt, which is what he's doing with Devin Dotson and Quentin Grimes. You know, the last two or three years, it's been Frank Mason and Devontae Graham starting at the point. And those guys are both All-Americans. Frank Mason won a National Player of the Year award. Devontae Graham was, I believe, a first or second team All-American last year. And now they're heading into a season with a pair of freshmen who, frankly, were not all that impressive in the two exhibition games that Kansas did play. But they were certainly awesome on Tuesday night. Quentin Grimes actually led the team in scoring, finished with 21 points, hit six of his first seven threes, added four assists, had a couple of tough buckets in transition, was a guy that didn't the ball didn't die in his hands in the offense. He was able to move it. I thought Devin Dotson was really good defensively. He is somebody that is very quick, very strong, and can get up and kind of harass people. I think part of the reason we saw Cassius Winston with, I believe it was five turnovers last night, was the kind of defense that Dotson was able to play on him. He made some big threes. I think he was three or five from beyond the arc. And he just overall like played really, really, really well and made some big shots down the stretch and kind of controlled things down the stretch. And it makes sense that he did, because Michigan State is not a team that is going to be known for their backcourt defensive stalwartness, not with this group, not with Cassius Winston, not with Matt McQuaid, not with Josh Langford being the guys that are going to be playing on that end of the floor. But nonetheless, it was a very, very impressive performance for those Kansas guards, and something that I think that they can count on moving forward. I'm certainly less concerned about their guard play than I was heading in to the season. I think that's all I have to say about Kansas. You know, like I mentioned earlier, it's very weird to be talking about a preseason number one team that came out, dominated a game against another top 10 team, ended up winning, and is almost definitively going to be dropping one spot in the polls the next time that the top 25 comes out. But that's what happens when Duke does the things that Duke did. Real quick on Michigan State. I love this line from Brendan Quinn, who is the Michigan State beat writer for The Athletic. This is what he wrote in his column about the game. Quote, "Age brings wisdom sometimes, but it also brings responsibility. They can't act like they've been there. They have to play like it." And what he's referring to is Michigan State's junior class, which for about 28 minutes was more or less terrible on Tuesday night. Maybe terrible is a little bit too strong, but they weren't as good as we thought they were going to be, or we hoped they were going to be, until about midway through the second half, when Michigan State was down by as many as 17 points and they finally started figuring things out and made a little bit of a run. And I think they cut it to three at one point with under 30 seconds left, but they never actually had possession of the ball within one possession with a chance where they could have tied it. down the stretch of that game. So they made it close. The scoreline looks a lot more flattering than how that game actually played out, which, again, is why I'm so tilted about the fact that Kansas wasn't actually able to get that cover. Jayhawks, man. That might be the reason I don't rank them number one in the country. Good teams win, great teams cover. Kansas couldn't cover. Obviously, they can't be great. But back to Michigan State. You know, Winston, he ended up with 13 points and 11 assists, but he also had five turnovers. Nick Ward was really, really bad in the first half. He finished with 9 points and five boards. He was 2 of 8 from the field. He was 5 of 10 from the free throw line. He had five turnovers. He committed 4 fouls. He looked like he really struggled with kind of the size of Udoka Azubuike. And to be frank, Azubuike is probably the worst possible matchup for Nick Ward because both of them basically play the same way. They're just bigger and more physical than whoever they go up against. And the problem with going up against Udoka Azubuike is if you're Nick Ward is that he is about 3 inches taller with a wingspan that is like 7 inches longer. You're not going to be able to dislodge him. You're not going to be able to move him off the block. And you're not going to be able to finish through him because of the size that he has. So I think that might have just been a bad matchup for Nick Ward. I think that he's going to end up playing a little bit better as the season kind of progresses. Langford and Matt McQuaid both put together pretty impressive second half performances, but they were not very good in the first half. You know, Langford ended up hitting 4 threes, which is a good sign for a guy that kind of developed a reputation for being a mid-range scorer. And, you know, he's going to have to make those shots from distance if Michigan State is going to live up to the potential that I think we all believe they have. And more or less, like, I think this team is fine, right? I think they're, you know, a top 12, top 15 team in college basketball. I think that the way that freshman or that junior class ended up playing down the stretch and responded to being down 17 to the number one team in the country was something that they can build off of. You know, they're not at a point where we can talk about moral victories, but I don't think this was a moral victory. I thought that Michigan State played pretty well against the one of the two best teams in college basketball. You're going to lose games like that if you are not on that level. I don't think Michigan State is on that level. But I thought that Aaron Henry provided them with a lift off the bench. I thought that Kenny Goins was awesome. He finished with 17 points, 11 boards, 3 assists. He made 3 threes. He's going to operate as kind of that stretch four. I thought he did some good things for him defensively. I think that he is going to be a good piece. You know, I think they're fine. I think they're a top 15 team. I think they're going to end up as like a 3 or 4 seed in the tournament. They are probably still the best team in the Big Ten, and they're probably not a Final Four contender. And I don't think that anything we saw on Tuesday night necessarily changes the way that I feel about them long term. You know, they're good. They're not great. That junior class are guys that are good. That junior class are guys that are going to be taken out of certain matchups because they are somewhat limited. You know, athleticism is always going to be an issue for this team. Defense, especially in the backcourt, is always going to be an issue for this team. So they are what they are. I still think they're going to win the Big Ten. I don't think that you can really say too much negative coming out of this game for Michigan State. But let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about the nightcap, which I know that everybody wants to hear about. So, Duke, 118, Kentucky, 84. Before I get into kind of extended thoughts about the Blue Devils and RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson and Cam Reddish and all those guys, I think we need to point out that loss probably had as much to do with Kentucky as it did with Duke. And let me kind of work through some extended thoughts here. So I wish I beat this drum harder in the preseason so I could sit here and say that I saw this coming and I predicted it and I didn't say it hard enough. And I didn't kind of go all in on it when I probably should have, but I mostly think that Kentucky is going to be fine. Part of what happened was they got punched in the mouth early and it looked, I don't want to say they quit. That probably is too strong. But they never responded to that first punch that Duke took because I think they, like us, knew that they were beat about midway through the first half. When we knew they were beat, they knew they were beat. And it's hard to kind of fight back when you are playing your first game of the season on national television and just getting absolutely boat raced and embarrassed and, you know, it is a little bit worrisome that they didn't necessarily have that fight. But I mean, at some point, you know, you lose by 34 points. There's not really, what's a little bit of fight going to do? Keep it within 25. So I'm not necessarily too worried about the issue with, for me, is that while Kentucky has a lot of depth, they have 9 guys on this roster that are good enough to be starters on a top 5, top 3 basketball team, right? I think if you look at every single one of their rotation players, every single guy that they have on scholarship out of that top 9, from Emmanuel Quickly, Ashton Hagans, Quad A Green, Keldon Johnson, Tyler Hero, EJ Montgomery, Reed Travis, PJ Washington, Nick Richards, all 9 of those guys are good enough that they can be starters on a top 5 basketball team. The problem is that they don't have a star. None of those guys are necessarily built to be more than like the 3rd best player or the 4th best player on a really, really, really good basketball team. They have a roster full of complementary pieces, full of role players. And you know, even Keldon Johnson, who I thought was really, really good last night, to me, he's built something in the mold of a Miles Bridges. And I made this point in the preseason. And you know, I don't want that to sound like I'm directly comparing him to Miles Bridges, because Miles Bridges was an All-American. Miles Bridges was a top 10 pick. Miles Bridges is an absolute freak of nature athletically. And Keldon Johnson, as good as he was last night, he's not that kind of an athlete. And I don't think it's right to put that kind of pressure on him as a player. What I'm saying is that the knock on Miles Bridges all last season was that he couldn't take that next step to be a guy that took over a team, to be a guy that was the absolute alpha offensively, to be the guy that was totally comfortable being the number one option in an offense and being capable of taking over a game offensively. But he can do so many different things on the floor, whether it's guard up, guard down. He can protect the rim. He got some steals. You know, he was able to space the floor a little bit. He got to the offensive glass. He was a really, really good defender. He played his ass off every second that he was on the floor. Those are all the qualities that Keldon Johnson has. He is a perfect, you know, complimentary wing, a perfect guy that you're going to trust to play his tail off defensively every second that he's on the court, a guy that's going to go get some offensive rebounds, a guy that is going to be able to be switchable defensively, a guy that is going to run the offense and you know, take advantage of a closeout and make a three when he's open and finish in the lane. There's a lot of really good things that Keldon Johnson does. But I don't think that he is, I don't think it's a great sign if he ends up being your star offensively. But the other problem is he's also the only guy on that roster that is truly a two-way player. If you put together the best offensive 5 that Kentucky has, and you put together the best defensive 5 that Kentucky has, Keldon Johnson is the only guy that's going to be on both of those teams. That's a problem. That is a big, big problem for this team, because they have, other than Keldon Johnson, they have 8 guys that can go out and do a job well, but can really only do that job that they're asked to do. You know, Ashton Hagans is an elite defender. He could be a liability offensively. Emmanuel Quickly is a little bit better than him offensively, but he's not necessarily great as in that kind of point guard role that John Calipari asks of his point guards, and he's not as good of a defender as Hagans is. Green is needed on the court as a secondary ball handler because of some of the limitations that those two freshman point guards have. But, you know, he is a guy that's a liability defensively. And when he's on the basketball court, that means that you have one of those freshman point guards on the floor, which means that there's only room for one of Keldon Johnson and Tyler Hero. Tyler Hero is probably Kentucky's best offensive weapon, best perimeter weapon. He's certainly their best shooter. And he is a guy who at times in their exhibitions and in their trip to the Bahamas worked as the go-to guy, played the same role in the offense that Jamal Murray did, Malik Monk did, Kevin Knox did. They ran the same plays for him that Calipari ran for those other 3 guys in the past. But he's a problem defensively, you know, and not in the good way. He is a problem for Kentucky on the defensive end of the floor. So can you sacrifice having Keldon Johnson on the floor to play Tyler Hero because it opened things up for you offensively? I don't think you can. But not having Tyler Hero on the floor bogs things down for him. And it means that Keldon Johnson is going to be out there with, what, Quad A Green and one of the point guards? Is that necessarily the best backcourt you can have? I think that Tyler Herro is better offensively than is a better piece for them on the offensive end than what Kwadi Green is, but you need Kwadi Green out there because the point guard play isn't quite good enough, but you can't have Kwadi Green be the primary point guard because he is best being the secondary option, a secondary ball handler, kind of playing off the ball the way that Quinn Cook did for that 2015 Duke team. Then we get to the front court. You know, as good as Reed Travis is as a rebounder, as good as he is as a low post scorer, he's not a guy that's going to stretch the floor, and he's not a guy that's going to protect the rim. PJ Washington can protect the rim a little bit, can stretch the floor a little bit better, but he's not the rebounder that Reed Travis is. He's not the low post threat that Reed Travis is. And I think definitively those are the two best big guys that Kentucky has. But I think that EJ Washington is probably their best scorer in the front court and the most talented front court player. Nick Richards is the best defensive presence they have. He's the rim protector. He's the guy that can be a vertical spacer offensively. And you got to find out two of those guys are going to be on the bench at all times. So I don't know how Cal is going to find a way to get his best five on the floor because so many of his guys are really, really good at doing one thing and playing a role when that doesn't necessarily fit all that well with what the other roles that are going to be played on the floor is. So I think that Cal is going to be able to figure this thing out because he is unbelievable at making teams better, at finding ways to get guys to buy into roles he wants them to play, at finding ways to make his teams better and develop his teams and develop his players and develop roles for each guy on his roster. He is as good as anybody in the country at that. We knock him all the time. I don't think he's the greatest X's and O's coach. You know, he's not a guy that's reinventing the wheel with what he does offensively. He's not John Beilein, right? But he understands the psychology of kids that age. He understands how to get the most out of them. He understands how to get them to be the best player that they can be in the role he needs them to play to make his team as good as it can possibly be. And I think if you look at Kentucky teams throughout his tenure, they get better and better and better and better as the season progresses. And that's a testament to what he's able to do as a basketball coach, even if he's not somebody that's going to be dialing up the most impressive X's and O's that have all the nerds, the X's and O's nerds on Twitter going crazy because of the play that they just saw. So I think that Kentucky's going to figure this out, but they have a lot further to go to get to where they want to be than I think anybody realized, including myself, in the preseason. Now, Duke, man, I'll tell you what this game reminded me of. November 19th, 2014. Number one Kentucky, who was 3-0 at the time, was playing number five Kansas in that same NBA arena in Indianapolis. Kentucky won that game 72-40. They held Kansas to 12 second half points. Kansas shot under 20% from the floor for that game. After watching Kentucky do that to Kansas, everybody realized just how good that basketball team was. Everybody left that arena saying, how in the world are you going to beat this Kentucky team that had Karl Towns, that had Devin Booker, that had Trey Lyles, that had Tyler Ulis? How are you going to beat that Kentucky team when they defend the way that they just defended? And it's a little bit different for Duke because that what they did best wasn't defensively, but everybody leaving that arena, everybody that watched that game on TV left there saying, how do you beat this Duke team? Because the truth is this, Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett are just, they're basically unguardable at the college level. RJ Barrett, because of the fact that he's like this combination of being a point forward, along with being a small ball four, along with being like a bucket getting left-handed slasher that understands how to weave through traffic and finish at the rim, along with being the kind of like tough physical athlete that NBA teams are looking for in terms of being like a grab and go big man, right? You need to use your best defender on him because he is the best player in college basketball. The other problem is that Zion Williamson is such an athletic freak that it makes it so that there's just no way to stop him. There were two plays last night that really stood out to me, and it was because Kentucky at the time had Reed Travis on Zion, and Reed Travis is probably the one guy in the sport that can match Zion Williamson in terms of like raw strength and size. You know, Reed Travis is a guy that's like 6'8", 260, that was a high major football recruit coming out of high school. You know, he's not some slouch. He's not some stiff. He's not just some weightlifter that, you know, you see on Venice Beach. He's a good athlete that is big and strong and physical. And he just had absolutely no shot of staying in front of Zion. There were two plays where Zion literally took one dribble from outside the three-point line and got all the way to the rim. One time it was for a dunk. One time it was for a layup. Reed Travis had absolutely no chance. But the problem is that if you put anybody other than Reed Travis on Zion, he is going to be able to just go right through them. Reed is the only guy on maybe in all of college basketball that is strong enough that Zion can't go right through him. And he went around him like he wasn't even there. Zion made Reed Travis look like he was like trying a chair defending in layup lines. That's how bad it was. So how do you guard Zion? You need your best defender probably on Zion. You also need your best defender on RJ. There are only so many guys in all of college basketball that have the size and the athleticism to be able to guard either of them at least with some kind of modicum of effectiveness, right? So that leaves you in a situation where all of a sudden, like, your third best wing defender on the floor is going to be guarding Cam Reddish. That's how we got into situations where Tyler Hero was being guarded by Cam Reddish. And that's part of the reason that Cam was able to show out the way that he did last night. You know, one, he just got wide open threes and he made them. And two, when he was being guarded by Tyler Hero, he didn't have a chance. And this is a little bit of a tangent and off topic, but I think that is going to be phenomenal for Cam Reddish and his draft stock. He's going to feast on guarding the worst wing when he's being guarded by the worst wing defenders on these teams. You know, he's going to put up, he probably won't put up huge raw numbers, but he's going to put up some really impressive efficiency numbers. He's going to look really good doing it because he's being guarded guys that have no chance, being guarded by guys that really have no chance to guard him. And, you know, I think it works out for him because now he's in a situation where even though he's not the best player on the team, even though he's not the go-to guy, he's going to look really good. And that is going to help him from an NBA perspective. His tape is going to look really, really impressive. But back to RJ and Zion, like, what made that Duke team so good last night? So what was the knock on them heading into the season, right? We were wondering about what happens when they get into half-court situations. Do they have the shooting? Are there players on the floor that are good enough to be effective without having the ball in their hands, right? Those are the concerns. Well, you know what? Duke shot 12 for 26 from three last night. RJ was 3 for 7. Cam was 3 for 8. Zion made the only three that he shot, and he made another deep jumper. Trey Jones was 1 for 1. So combine that with the fact that 26% of their offense came in transition, and like, they're just, how often are they going to play in the half court? How often the concerns we have about them being a half court team, how many teams are going to be able to make them play half court like that? Maybe Virginia will, maybe Syracuse will. I don't know who else will. So that to me is the most impressive part about this. Like, they have four guys on that roster, the four freshmen can all grab a rebound and go. They don't need to make an outlet pass. They can grab a rebound and go coast to coast. And it's not even like it's uncommon. Like, that's what Coach K wants them to do. Zion Williamson is so good at getting past people and getting all the way to the rim and going coast to coast. RJ Barrett is so good at weaving through traffic and finishing in situations where you don't understand how he went from the three-point line to the rim. That's what those guys excel at. So I don't know how you stop that. I don't know how you defend that. I don't know how you deal with the fact that every night that Duke plays, they are going to have the two best basketball players on the floor in RJ and Zion. And most nights, they are going to have the three best players on the floor when you throw in Cam Reddish. How do you deal with the fact that your third best wing defender is going to be guarding Cam Reddish, who could be a top five pick? That's a problem that teams are going to have to deal with. And I'm dead serious when I say this. Please post in the reviews on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is, post in the reviews your idea of how to stop this Duke team. Because I'm fascinated to know. I have absolutely no idea how you guard them. I have no idea how you slow these guys down. The last thing I want to know, well, there's actually two things I think were also important to note, is that the Duke's defense was better than I think people realized it was going to be. And I'm proud of myself for kind of beating this drum. I got this, maybe I didn't get Kentucky right, but I got this right. Duke is going to be really good defensively. Trey Jones can get out and pressure the ball without fouling. He really understands how to be like a guard in 75 feet, a one-on-one man-to-man. He can really get out and provide pressure on the ball. He can make it hard for you to get within like 35 feet to get into your offense. The other part is that Duke has these three wing guys that are like quintessential athletic switchable wings that can guard anywhere from like 2 to 4. RJ, Cam, and Zion can all do that at the college level. So they get out and they overplay on the first pass into the offense. They overplay on the wing and they don't let you get into what you want to run, which means that you're basically forced to. The whole point of that defense and that style of defense is they're daring players with the ball in their hands to beat you one-on-one. They're basically saying, we think our defenders are better one-on-one than your ball handlers are at making plays one-on-one. And it worked last night. You know, so they take you out of what you want to do offensively. They try to force turnovers. They overplay passing lanes. And as soon as they get the rebound or get a steal or pick up a loose ball or get a turnover, they're gone. And they're gone in transition, and you're going to have to deal with all that athleticism and all that playmaking ability coming at you at full speed. That's not an easy thing to deal with. And perhaps the better sign is that I think – so obviously they have the three stars, right? But beyond that, I think everyone really just bought into their role. And the most important one here, I think, is Trey Jones, right? Trey Jones is the top, 12 prospect consensus. He is the younger brother of Tyus Jones, obviously, who won the national title. We're going to get sick of hearing that by the end of the season, but he is. And he kind of has that same mindset, right? Like he's a purebred winner. He cares about winning above all else. He doesn't care what his numbers are going to be. He doesn't care if he gets the accolades. He knows that people are going to pay attention to him if he's on a team that is putting up these ridiculous win totals and these ridiculous numbers, and he's effective in his role. And basically what he's being asked to do is just harass people defensively, facilitate the offense, drive and kick when he has to, make plays when he has to, score in transition when he has to, but basically kind of make sure the ball keeps moving, make sure RJ and Zion and Cam are all getting their touches, and then just kind of stay out of the way and let those guys do what they have to do. And he's fine with that. And he's really, really, really good at doing that. And he also just so happens to be one of what? The 30, 40, 50 best players in the entire sport that can make a three if he has to, that can score at the rim if he has to, that can play in transition, that can play in pick and rolls, that all throughout his high school career made big shots and won big basketball games. That is such a bonus for Coach K in terms of the way that this team needs to play. And it sets the tone for everybody else. If you are Javon Delorier, for example, right? And you see Trey Jones, who is this guy that has the potential to be a one and done point guard, if he went anywhere else, accepting this role and playing the way that he's playing, why would you complain about maybe not getting enough shots or maybe not getting enough minutes or maybe not doing your job the way that you're supposed to be doing your job, even if that job does not require you to touch the ball all that often? You're not going to, because you see Trey Jones doing it. It sets a tone. Same thing with Alex O'Connell. Alex O'Connell came off the bench and hit three threes last night, but he didn't play a ton of minutes. You know, I think his role in this team is going to be kind of minimized. One, because he's not a great defender. And two, you know, why are you going to have him on the wing when you could play Zion and RJ and Cam for 35 minutes apiece, right? I think that Marquise Bolden was good in his job last night. You know, he's basically being asked to provide energy on the offensive glass, be vertical at the rim if Zion or someone gets beat on the perimeter, provide some rim protection, provide some verticality at the rim, be able to switch a little bit and hedge a little bit on ball screens, which he actually did a lot better than I thought he would be able to do last night, and just play hard and don't complain. And he did that. He finished with 7 points, 4 boards, changed a couple shots at the rim, You know, he was fine last night. He was good. He did his job really, really well. Javon, let's put it like this. Marquise Bolden was good enough last night that we didn't even notice that Javon was a total non-factor. You know, Alex O'Connell did his job last night. Trey Jones did his job last night. Jack White finished with 9 points, 11 boards, 3 assists, and made a three. He had one play in the first half where, you know, he kind of hustled to get a steal and pick up a loose ball, got it to Zion, who threw down a two-footed dunk from 13 feet away from the basket. Their role players are good at their job and are happy to play the role that they are going to be asked to play. And that right there is what makes them more dangerous than anything. Because when you have good players that accept the fact that they're only going to be playing this certain role, when you have all that star power, that is exactly what that 2015 Kentucky team had. That is exactly why that 2015 Kentucky team went 38-0. That is exactly why we watched them play in the 2014 Champions Classic and said, I have no idea how anybody's going to beat them. And what it took was a terrific performance from a Wisconsin team that had a whole bunch of veterans, that had Sam Decker, that had Frank Kaminsky, that had Bronson Koenig, that had all of these guys, Nigel Hayes. It took them playing out of their minds in the Final Four to be able to beat Kentucky. And I think we're going to see that situation with Duke. Like, how many teams can play with them? In my mind, I think that there are maybe two that I can say right off the bat are going to be a tough matchup. I think that that's Virginia, and I think that that's Syracuse. Both those teams have plenty of size and athleticism on the wings. Both those teams are elite, elite, elite defensively. Like, they might be the two best defensive teams in all of college basketball this season. Both of them play to control the pace and do that very effectively. I think that those are tough matchups for Duke. I think North Carolina is North Carolina. That's one of those things where if they're good enough, you got to kind of throw the record books out. I think Nazir Little has the athleticism to match up with those wings, and Kenny Williams is really impressive defensively last night. So that might be a tough loss That might be a tough game for him. And overall, like, the ACC is just loaded. You know, no one's talking about Virginia Tech. Florida State was up by 30 on Florida last night. So they are going to be tested, and running through the ACC is not going to be an easy thing to do. You know, I think that that game, it'd be not, oh man, it's too bad that Kelly Utilly got hurt, because I would love to see this Duke team go up against Gonzaga when Gonzaga's at full strength. They're not going to be, and that's assuming that they end up squaring off in the Maui title game. But still, even if they end up, even if Gonzaga's at full strength, you still got to say that Duke is the favorite heading into that game. You know, you got to say that Duke is the favorite against Virginia. You got to say that they're the favorite against Syracuse. And, you know, until we see somebody step up and play the way and make it tough for Duke, like, it's kind of hard to imagine them struggling this year. And I'm not saying that they're going to end up going undefeated, but what I am saying is that they are going to be pretty big favorites in every game that they play the rest of the year. And it's going to take a terrific performance from a very, very good basketball team to be able to beat them. And, you know, I'm excited to watch it. I think that when it's all said and done, the Zion Williamson show and the RJ Barrett show and this Duke team is going to be much more entertaining to watch as the season goes on than I think even we expected. And we knew and expected it to be absolutely sensational. But that is all I got for you now. I will see you guys again on Friday when we are talking through a preview of the weekend's games.